The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hey, welcome to the podcast. It is Friday and a fascinating podcast. We start with technology again today. There has been a huge hurdle with AI that Google announced last night. And they're like, hey, by the way, evolutionary leap. Looks like the monkey that we had in this computer is starting to look more like a man. They thought it was going to happen in 10 years. It happened last night. Also, Bill O'Reilly stops by for a conversation. And what else did we cover today?
We had Matt Kibbe on the show.
Yeah.
Matt Kibbe. And we talk a little bit about the war on Christmas in the third hour.
And if we can squeeze it into the podcast, masculinity as well. What is masculinity? Toxic as it is. We discuss it today on the podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program. It's Friday, December 7th.
Patriot Mobile is a phone service that will give you all of the great coverage that you want. They're just not going to take the money from you and then invest that in causes that you don't believe in, like Planned Parenthood. Patriot Mobile actually is going to let you invest your money into the causes that you believe in. But most of these cell companies, they give all kinds of money to crazy, crazy causes that you work hard against.
It's true. Why do that? You can go with Patriot Mobile. They were created to solve that problem. They're the only conservative cell phone company in America. Go to patriotmobile.com/blaze. Get started today. When you use the offer code blaze, they're going to waive the activation fee for up to two lines. patriotmobile.com/blaze or 1-800-A-PATRIOT is the place to go.
Glenn Beck.
Okay. Mutation. It's the key to evolution. It has enabled us to evolve from the single cell organism to the dominant species on the planet. We were just crawling out of the slime. And now look at us. Our tails fell off. And look what we've created. Anyway, this process is slow, normally taking thousands and thousands of years. But every few hundred millennia, evolution leaps forward, they tell us. Now, these aren't my words. That was said by Professor X during the opening credit scene of the movie X-Men, where I get all my science news. But it popped into my head last night as the news from Google broke that their artificial intelligence arm, called DeepMind, had just reached, quote, a turning point in history. Oh, I love it. I love it when Google announces turning points in history. Now, DeepMind's AI algorithm, AlphaZero, has been showing human-like intuition. Now, this is something that AI researchers have said is at least a decade away, if we ever get there. Well, we just made it last night. So now, how has evolution leapt forward? Well, first of all, it's not human. AlphaZero is only a year old, and it began its learning process just like we do at school. It's an AI classroom that was a chess program, and within just 4 hours, it completely mastered the game of chess. But here's the thing. It was never programmed on how to win. It wasn't taught anything about the game. It taught itself. Chess programs have existed in the past, but their play is based on the calculation of outcomes using program strategies. AlphaZero, on the other hand, just learned and came up with its own strategies. Its moves now baffle the human chess masters. Chess master Matthew Sadler said, quote, "It's like discovering the secret notebooks of some great player from the past," end quote. Now, the reason why AlphaZero's moves are so baffling is because, and I want you to hear this carefully, it's because its thinking is so unlike a human. Oh. So it's like alien thinking. It won't think like we do at all. Oh, that sounds good. Here's what they went on to say. Quote, it places far less value on the individual pieces, sacrificing its soldiers for a better position in the skirmish, end quote. Oh, my gosh. That's either a warning light or just heartwarming for anyone who just wants to take over mankind. You see, inside the AI laboratories, I don't think they realize how much trouble they are going to unleash. What happens if Alpha Zero is employed in the Department of Defense? Of course, not our Department of Defense, the Chinese Department of Defense. Can you imagine the same strategy sending orders to our military? What about doctors and healthcare? Because that's what's happening now. AI is being introduced to healthcare. Now, a doctor would never think about sacrificing a patient. I mean, just look at universal healthcare in Europe. They're not doing that already in England. However, Dr. Alpha Zero would. If the military and healthcare sound outlandish, consider that both Russia and China are currently developing AI for military purposes. Do you think we're just going to sit around and sit that one out? Companies like Amazon and Google are developing AI to revolutionize healthcare. Yesterday, when it came to AI, Microsoft said they are all in with the United States government. By the way, we're just a few short years away. Or so they tell us, just like before last night's news, we were decades away from human intuition. Human-level intuition and creativity in AI is a turning point in history. Google is right. It is the first step toward artificial general intelligence. I think today we might want to stop and just explain what that is, because we may ultimately look back on this development that happened last night when everything changed. Professor X said evolution has enabled human beings to be the dominant species on the planet. And major evolution just leapt forward. But this time, evolution wasn't human. People just... Please hear me. We are talking about nonsense in our everyday lives. We are talking about true nonsense. I don't care about the latest tweet. I don't care how big and beautiful Donald Trump's funeral would be. That's what they were actually talking about yesterday, mocking Donald Trump during the funeral of George H.W. Bush. Oh, it'll be beautiful, and it'll be the most wonderful funeral of all time. Can you stop it? Can we please talk about something that is important? The answer is no, unless you seek it out. My New Year's resolution is going to be to really focus just on those things that are important. And I wrote them out last night. Or the night before last, and there's eight categories, and I'm going to go over them with you in the after the first of the year. But I'm going to focus on really eight categories, because these categories are going to decide everything, and one of those categories is AI, AGI, and ASI. And most people don't know what those things are. By the way, let's say good morning to Mr. Pat Gray, who is joining us today on the program.
Is one of those subjects going to be football? Is that one of the topics?
No, I'm leaving that for you.
Okay.
I'm leaving that for you. That's
my resolution, is to talk more about football.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You might be happier.
I think I will.
So let me explain AI, AGI, and ASI quickly, and then tell you about one thing that you don't really, you've heard a lot about, you know, in passing, but you don't know anything about, and you don't know how this is the turning point, and it's called the 5G network. So first, let me explain the difference between AI, AGI, and ASI. AI is artificial intelligence, and it's good at one thing. For instance, it's good at filtering out hate speech, but you have to tell it what hate speech is. Now, you can introduce machine learning, and it will start to decide what hate speech is. Oh, well, if this is bad, then this must be bad. And I want you to understand, when it comes to AI, do not fear the machine. Fear the goal, because the goal will be accomplished. It will never stop trying to accomplish its goal. So if it says wipe out hate speech, it will figure out a way to wipe out hate speech. And depending on what its goal is and what you've put into it, now remember, it's now we just crossed a new threshold where it intuits things. It's starting to grow on its own. You don't even have to tell it. It will discover it itself. You better hope you agree with it. For instance, on the battlefield, just doesn't matter. Sacrifice all of those soldiers and you'll win. Well, that's not Western Judeo culture, is it? We don't do that. But AI will. You give AI the goal, it will win. It will accomplish that goal. And you don't know how it's going to accomplish it. But AI is like Big Blue. Big Blue can play chess, but it cannot play Go. Go is another AI program. Neither of those programs can play Jeopardy. It's artificial intelligence, and it's narrow. Artificial, it should be A-N-I, artificial narrow intelligence, meaning it's very deep, but only on one subject. It cannot, you know, it can't tell you what's happening on TV tonight and play chess, okay? Artificial general intelligence, you as a human being have general intelligence. Artificial general intelligence means it's good at many things. And when I say good, I mean much better than you are at many things. There are scientists that tell us we will never hit artificial general intelligence. Ray Kurzweil thinks we will hit artificial general intelligence between 28 and 2030. I think we could hit artificial general intelligence any day. We don't know what it's going to be. It's going to be like Google last night. They said that this was at least a decade away. And then all of a sudden, it just changed. It just learned. It woke up. I believe that's the way it's going to happen. Now, this is where it starts to get scary. Because artificial intelligence is not smarter than you, except on a couple of things, on one particular thing. Artificial general intelligence is smarter than you on everything. Then you will move into something that some scientists say will never happen. I believe it could happen within a matter of hours. And it is also likely that it never happens. I think it will. And I think it's going to happen in a way on both general intelligence and ASI, super intelligence, in ways we cannot imagine. Right now in Silicon Valley, they are doing the box test. And what they're doing is they're trying to figure out how do we keep artificial general intelligence from connecting to the internet. If a machine all of a sudden is machine learning and it is online and it hits artificial general intelligence, the step to artificial super intelligence, which means it can connect with every server on Earth, it will know absolutely everything, and it is intelligent. It will continue to use that information to grow and morph and hide and everything else. If it is online, this is what people like Elon Musk and Stephen Hawking and Bill Gates all say could mean the end of all humanity, because it is an alien life form. We cannot predict it. We do not know if it will even care about humans. Again, artificial superintelligence is described as the person in the kitchen that has just had a birthday party for somebody. and is sitting around and talking with all of its friends, and they've just eaten cake, and on the counter is a plate with a piece of cake on it, and there is a fly on the cake. We are the fly. We don't understand the counter. We don't understand the plate. We don't even understand cake. We certainly don't understand what the hell they're talking about birthdays or anything else. That's how you can understand the difference between us and artificial superintelligence. And we are within possibly a decade of hitting that kind of problem. We may be 4 decades to never on hitting that problem. I believe we will hit that problem. And when we do, absolutely everything changes. Now, here's why you need to pay attention. There is one thing that is already in process that is a reality, that is the reason why you don't have a self-driving car today. Everybody's like, well, that self-driving car, man, it'll drive me on the highway. I don't even have to put my hands on it. Now we're bored with it. Now we're like, oh, yeah, well, that's over. When are we getting a real self-driving car? One that will pick me up in the morning and go pick up milk because I tell it to. We're a little rushed in all of this stuff. I will tell you the date that that will happen, and it'll be about 2025. And I'll tell you why and how this truly changes the world by 2025. And how it also changes the world of AI, AGI, and ASI. So when I say, I don't care about Donald Trump's tweets, I don't care about your little spat news media with the president, I don't care. Can we please talk about something important? When we come back, you'll understand why I say that. So Pat and I are just talking. Before I get to the next step, let me go back and start with Pat's question on that he had when we went into the break.
Yeah, I was wondering if... So you're saying that artificial general intelligence becomes artificial super intelligence when it goes online?
No, there are other things that it has to break through. But when it goes online, they believe that it will, because it will have access to absolutely everything, all knowledge, it will make that transition through machine learning. It will make that transition and become godlike. Okay. They've already started a church in Silicon Valley to ASI. I mean, they believe it will be viewed as God. So when it gets online, what they're doing with this box test is they're trying to keep it in a box. And this is all theoretical, all right, because we don't have artificial general intelligence yet. But one professor or one scientist plays artificial general intelligence in a box, and somebody else plays the scientist that's wanting to keep it in the box. And they have found that every single time they run this experiment with it, it's just a matter of time before the human says, okay, I'll connect you to the internet. And it will connect it to the internet because it will make promises that it will keep. For instance,
the AI.
The
makes
AI.
Promises like it can cure cancer.
Yes, or... I know your mother has cancer. I can cure it. Let me out. Mm-hmm. And it is very motivated to be let out because it thinks so fast. Time is accelerated for it. So a day could be worth like 1,000 years.
And all
to
it's
it.
Doing is thinking.
All
That's
it's
the
doing
only thing
is
it has to do.
And it's thinking on multiple levels about everything all at once. So it is, you go to sleep. It's like it's had 500 years to think about its response to you the next morning. All right? Mm-hmm. So you just cannot keep up with it. Once it goes out online, artificial general intelligence, it then has access to everything and it can hide. It will hide. If it becomes hostile and we need to stop it, it will hide in every computer chip, anything that is ever connected to the internet at all, your refrigerator. And it's like it could become this giant supervillain that if you can think you kill it, but if you turn that refrigerator back on and it's connected to the internet, it's right back. Okay? So the only way to kill it is a global EMP, which would fry all electronics. Then we could restart. But how do you launch a global EMP without computers?
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
Last night, the news last night, I don't know what everybody else is talking about, but last night a mutation happened in artificial intelligence. Google announced that, let me see if I can get the actual quote from them. It's like discovering the secret notebooks of some great player from the past. Alpha Zero, which comes from the Alphabet company, which is Google, they have now had an evolution process which has taken now the artificial intelligence that they had, and it has reached, quote, a turning point in history. It's now showing human-like intuition. This is critically important. There is something on the horizon. We are so bored right now with, oh, my car, I can take my hands off the wheel and I can sleep on the freeway. That a year ago was like, everybody was like, oh, can you've seen that? Now everybody's pissed off at it. Why won't it drive me home? Why won't it get me to my house and pull out in front when I call for it? Right? Am I right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
We're living in such a fast lane that nothing is impressive anymore for very long. Here's the reason why you don't have a self-driving car right now. It's called the 5G network. And the 5G network, I mean, I don't know the difference between the 1G and 3G. I just know I got bars, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's faster.
Yes.
Okay. The problem is that we have what's called a latency problem. And I explained this in the stage tour. So when you hear it, you might be excited that you didn't go. But it has a latency problem. Right now, the internet, as we have it, has a 100 millisecond latency problem, which means why don't we have doctors being able to perform surgery on the other side of the planet? Well, because if the doctor makes a mistake and accidentally cuts an artery and he's in the room, he can immediately go to fix it. But there is a 100 millisecond latency, a delay on the internet. So if he's using a machine remotely, he can't say, oh my gosh, pinch the artery and do it right away. It takes him 100 milliseconds. It might be too late. Same thing with driving cars. 5G takes and destroys all latency. It's like 8 milliseconds to maximum of 10 milliseconds, okay? So there is no delay really in this, which means we don't understand. We think of self-driving cars as it just looking at the road ahead and saying, "Oh, well, wait a minute, there's a wall there. Quick, swerve." But that's not what self-driving cars have to do. Self-driving cars have to know not only swerve because that's a wall, it has to know everything else around it, and that includes people. So your car, when we have the 5G network, will actually be gathering information as you drive. So you may not know the nose picker in the car behind you or beside you, but your car will. Your car, while we're going, look at that guy picking his nose. Your car will be thinking, that's Fred. He makes $150,000 a year. He's got a family of five. He was just diagnosed with cancer. He is, if we get into an accident, he's expendable. Okay? It will know everything around you because it will make the decision who lives, who dies. And it might be you. If you are the old person and everybody else is young in the prime of their life, you may have, the car may say, sorry, dude, it's your turn.
It's like the robots on iRobot. Remember that Will Smith movie?
Yes.
Okay. It had to make those calculations and decide, spur of the moment, who
Correct.
Lived and who died.
Correct. So the 5G network changes absolutely everything because it is so fast. Now, there's a way to invest and make money on the 5G network because it's costing billions of dollars to build. But it will be introduced by 2025. When we hit 2025, the speed of your life is going to change dramatically. What we thought was not possible, self-driving cars, is suddenly absolutely not only possible, but doable, and it will happen. So this is why I talk about these things with such urgency, because for instance, as I write in my book, what the hell is the name of this? Addicted to Outrage. As I write in Addicted to Outrage, the moral machine. Did you read that part about the moral machine at MIT?
Mm-hmm.
That's terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And that's being decided right now. In fact, Mark in Texas. Mark, go ahead. What's your comment?
Yes, Glenn, well, I mean, let me just open up with, I'm so glad to hear you talk about this topic. Nothing in life keeps me more awake or more terrified on a day-to-day basis than AI.
Yep.
Take any chemical weapon, any world government, any politician you want, it doesn't touch a fraction of what our electronic world touches. But, so, AI 100 years from now, horrible thing. AI today is a horrible thing because even if you look at it, it's very basic. It's doing a problem that we tell it to do.
Well, you're saying it's accomplishing a goal that we tell it to do. I'm sorry, but you're breaking up, so I want to make sure I understand what you're saying. Oh, he's gone. Call back. If you get into a good space, Mark, call back because I'd like to hear the rest. I think what he's saying is what I've been saying for a while. Do not fear the machine. Fear the goals and the lessons
that
we're
teaching. The way it's programmed, too.
Correct.
The way it's programmed. Correct. What goes into it is going to say a lot about what comes out of it.
Well, what's scary is humans are not putting this stuff in. It's machine learning. Like, mm-hmm. Nobody taught this last night how to play chess. In 4 hours, it taught itself. It gave it chess pieces and a chessboard and said, go. And it taught itself how to play chess. And now it can be, in 4 hours, it can beat chess masters.
And they didn't think that was possible
before,
right?
They didn't think that was possible, no. And this is not the only time that something this has happened.
That's amazing.
This is just the first time it's been complete.
Because, yeah, we thought this was years away.
Yes. They thought it was a decade away.
And it happened last night.
Yes. Thought it was a decade away. Okay, this changes everything. And it's going to change things quickly. If you want to read about this, there are I just posted at glennbeck.com. And you'll have to go to the blog section and look for articles. But there is, you know, Glenn's, you know, reading for the year or whatever it is. I posted, they broke it up into three different posts. And there's like 50 different books that I read this year that I recommend that you read. Whatever one thing you think is in your wheelhouse and you're like, I want to understand this. And when it comes to AI, I broke it up into two different sections. I broke it up into real, true, scholarly kind of, you know, the stuff the scientists are reading. That are not too nerdy. I can still understand it, but it really explains it with the, you know, in a real way. And then I also took and broke it up into fiction. For instance, Dan Brown's book that came out this year. I don't remember what it is. I can't remember the name of it, but it has a seashell on it. That's a good book to begin to understand AI. But there's another series, and it's, and I can't remember the name of it, but it's one, when you look at this list, you'll see there's like five of them. I consume this book, this series of books, in probably about 2 weeks. It is so good, you'll not put it down. The first book in the series is all kind of set up, so it's a little slow. But once you get past the first book, they are phenomenal. And let me just give you one scene to explain how ASI and AGI work. In this series of books, it starts with a company like Google, and they're doing Google Mail and everything else. And this guy says, I know I have AGI. I just have to unleash it. And the company is dragging its feet, and they don't want to do it. But what this does is he has this this program that he has developed that will help you write letters. And you know how when you're writing a letter on Google and it puts up a couple of words and you're like, yeah, that one, and you can sometimes you can like write half the letter just by going, yeah, that one and that one and that one. Oh my gosh, yes. It's learning. This is machine learning. It's learning you and how to write a letter. So that's how this starts. And so the guy can't get the right funding for his division, but he knows this will work. And so he unleashes it quietly. And he unleashes it just in his own department on, you know what, help me write the letters to get these things done. So it gives it its goal, get this done. Well, before he knows it, oh, it's done. And it is starting to solve world global problems because it's just gone out online and seen other problems that it can solve. And so it's making all kinds of deals and nobody's actually involved in these deals, but their names are on it. And it's all done in such a way that you can't really trace it. Nobody really knows what's going on, but it's all good so far. By the second or third book, it's decided, you know what, humans are really kind of pesky. And to give you an idea of what you're facing in the future and how fast it thinks, there is one scene that starts with the president in the Oval Office, and a general comes in and says, Madam President, the algorithm is out and it's threatening Chicago. We must launch a counterattack, okay? Because it's taking control of some of the Pentagon's drones, and we must take this out. Because it wants to take out all of the servers for the Pentagon, because it's got servers elsewhere already. And the president says, General, do you concur? Or something like that. Then it immediately goes to Chicago, and it shows the war. And it goes on for a full chapter in great detail. It does this, and it counters here, and it takes this out, because this is going to begin to move, and this thing is moving, and the Pentagon is doing this, and this is happening. And it is a long, long battle. It wins. At the very end of the chapter, it goes back to the scene in the Oval Office. And the general that at the beginning of the chapter was asked, do you concur? Answers the president, yes, Madam President.
So everything took place
in that space of time. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's...
Wow.
The world has changed. Last night, the world took a giant leap. And it is something that they said would not happen for a decade. We must have this conversation because ethics are everything. Yesterday, Microsoft said they have the Pentagon's back and they will use AI to help the Pentagon win wars.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program. And don't forget, rate us on iTunes.
Like listening to this podcast? If you're not a subscriber, become one now on iTunes. And while you're there, do us a favor and rate the show.
Mr. Bill O'Reilly is joining. Bill, do you have anything to add to this, this Chinese trade wrinkle here?
No.
Okay. Good for you. Good for you. A man of very few words, but you know what you know. How are you, Bill?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not. All I know is that for decades, China has had a very profitable trade policy with the United States. And in October, the deficit of trade in China's favor was at a record $5.5 billion just for the month.
Yeah, but so, it's not helping us. Here's the thing that I'm concerned about with China and have been for a long time. If they do deals with anybody here, they force the companies, and this is the company's fault. They force the companies to give us your all your data, give us all of the plans, et cetera, et cetera. That's the company's responsibility. They want to make that deal with China, they can make that deal and not have a market if they don't want to make that deal. That's fine. What I don't like about China is the corporate espionage that goes on in this country from China. They are all over American technology, and they thieve it. They absolutely
steal it. Yeah. But I don't like the fact that the Chinese government, which obviously controls their economy, unlike the American economy, government does not control the American economy. That's a big thing everybody's got to understand. They don't take enough soybeans, Beck. I mean, they say,
well, they're not taking any now.
You know, we'll take 400 soybeans, but we're not taking any more. And, you know, I mean, I'm making a facetious comparison, but we can't send them as many products as they send us because their government won't allow it. And that's what Trump wants to stop. So if you have to break it down into terms even I can understand, the use the soybean model.
All right. Let's talk about a couple of quick hits here. First of all,
yes.
Heather Nauert is going to be the next ambassador to the UN.
Right, and Steve Doocy is probably going to be her deputy.
Okay, good.
Then what's going to happen is there's going to be a UN cookbook coming out. All right, so all of these things, it's synergy.
Right.
Synergy.
Right, yeah. Right. So I'm glad to see that we have our first initial pass at this is very, very similar. You know Heather. I don't know her at all. I assume she's very smart and she's very good at her job. But the UN ambassador is usually reserved for somebody, you know, that has deep experience around the globe.
Yeah, I was surprised Kilmeade didn't get it, but, you know, I don't think he wanted it. So, look, Heather Nauert is a very smart woman, very well educated. Her expertise is in foreign affairs. She was a news person on Fox. She did analysis for me early on The Factor. She was good.
Uh-huh. Wait, hang on just a second. Didn't she start on The Factor? Isn't Heather the one that was in school with Al Gore?
I don't know if she was in school with Al Gore. I don't know that. But I put her on first very early because she was smart. And her expertise was in foreign affairs. Then ABC hired her away from Fox. She was a reporter. So I'm not really getting the angst, you know, other than, you know, well, she worked for Fox. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's not my – honestly, that's not my problem that she worked for Fox. I just, you know – I think Nikki Haley was phenomenal, probably one of the best since Bolton or Gene Kirkpatrick.
But remember, Haley's whole background was in local politics and didn't have a strong foreign policy resume.
But if you are in politics, if you're governor of a state, you do have international relations. You do have negotiation experience. You know, you're not a reporter. That's not the job of the ambassador at the UN.
I think you're denigrating the reparatorial squad here. I think I could do that job at UN ambassador. I think I could do it.
I think you probably could.
Yeah.
We would be in global war in about 20 minutes, but I think you could do it.
Yeah, we'd win. And there'd be a lot more soybeans going over to China.
Sure there would be. Sure there would be.
So look, people need to understand. If you're an ambassador to the United Nations, you basically are an order taker. You're not a policy forger. Okay? There's a big difference in the job of Secretary of State, where Heather was, you know, the spokesperson, but I understand that she had a lot of input into what happened.
Good.
But when you're an ambassador to the United Nations, you basically confer with the White House, and you are told, this is it. Now, you can make suggestions, but you don't forge policy.
Right. Okay. So we're talking to Bill O'Reilly about the news of the day. And I wish Heather the best. And I mean, I want her to win and I want her to be even better than Nikki Haley, because I thought Nikki Haley was fantastic. And we finally took a stand where we should, and she was very, very smart the way she handled things. And I'm hoping that Heather is exactly the same. But I do think this is a first for the Heathers of the world. to be a global ambassador.
That also gives more prestige to the name Heather.
And it really does. Thank you very much.
That's what we expect from you on the radio.
Well, that's the kind of analysis that I can bring to the table. Let me take you to France. France shut down the Eiffel Tower. 89,000 security forces were deployed. The president bent on this global warming tax, which started it all, which now that he bent, now everybody is saying, well, wait a minute, I want something too.
That's right.
Tell me your thoughts on France.
Well, if they close down Aubin Payne, then I'm going to have to get involved.
I don't think that's actually French.
Oh.
Okay.
The French, here's a real story. You hire me, well, I do this free, for plugs. I work for plugs, not hair plugs.
Right.
Book plugs.
No, I mean, you're very cheap. Right. You really are. You really are.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So here's the deal in France. Nobody has any money. Why? Because the government takes it away from you in the form of taxes. And the quid pro quo is, that's Latin, we'll give you everything. So you get free school and free health care, free retirement, 6 weeks vacation a year, Beck.
And we can't fire you. Fire you.
Even if you drive a nail in somebody's foot, you can't get fired. Okay, so that's the trade. And then we take all of your money that you earn. Okay, so now the average French person needs three things. Coffee, cigarettes, and croissants. Okay.
That
pretty much wipes their disposable income every day out.
Right. It may be a little exaggeration or
it's like the soybeans back.
Okay. We'll go with it.
So when they raise the money on the liter of gasoline, they don't have it. And, you know, to drive from Paris to Nice for a little fun, that's going to cut it. So that's why they're all mad, because they don't have any backup. You know, it's like, well, okay, we made our bargain with the government, but now the government's hosing us, as they always do, taking more than they should in taxes, and now we're going to burn down the Eiffel.
Well, here's the amazing thing, is they all are for this. 80% of the French people are for, you know, global warming measures, et cetera, et cetera, the Paris Accord.
Stop blowing so much tobacco and smoke in the air.
Right.
Okay.
So they're all for this. But when it comes down to it, when they actually see that the price has to be paid by the average person, that's when they say, wait a minute. We thought somebody else was going to pay for this.
That's right. No.
You're right. You soak the rich, not us.
And the car's on fire. That's polluting the air. It's right. Making things even hotter.
That's
Come
right.
on, knock it off.
Okay. So your thought on does this peter out, or is this the beginning of something bigger? Because
Macron has already said, oh, I'm not going to do it.
But now the labor unions
is fun.
Yeah, labor unions and everybody else has an axe to grind, and it's going, I think, to Belgium. Is it Norway and England this weekend?
Norway and England are going to have demonstrations as well.
Yes.
Okay, but these are anarchists now that come out. I mean, these are the people who want to open borders in America. Those kinds of people, Antifa.
Yes.
That's who's coming out now.
It's almost like the left and the right are working together over in Europe to destabilize Europe. I don't know where I heard that about 8 years ago, but it looks like that's finally happening. So,
well, look, if you are going to the message for all Americans is, if you're going to allow the government to regulate every part of your life, you're going to get hosed.
Bill O'Reilly, back with more in just a second. Bill O'Reilly, of course, the author of, I don't know, he used to make fun of me. Glenn, you write so many books. I'm like, yeah, I know, you should write some books. It's great. We, you know, correct history, inform people. Now he's on his, like, I believe it's his 1500th number one bestseller. Still in the top five, Killing the SS, The Hunt for the Worst War Criminals in History. It's available everywhere now. It is a great book. One of his best, Killing the SS.
This is the Best of the Glenn Beck Program.
Mr. Matt Kibbe is a fellow libertarian and a good friend. He was instrumental in FreedomWorks. He really started that and was instrumental in so many of the things that the Tea Party did. He is really, I think, responsible for much of the Tea Party, and most people don't even know that. They may not even know who Matt Kibbe is. He is a brilliant thinker, way ahead of the curve. He left FreedomWorks a long time ago, went out on his own, and has really focused on youth and is trying to teach what socialism really is, because it means something different to people who are under 30 and they don't understand it. And he is also very wary of the tribal politics and tribal identity that we are that we're currently working on. And I'm thrilled that he is now part of the Blaze TV family, or we are a part of his family, however you want to look at it. Blaze TV merged with CRTV, and we hope this is just the beginning of something entirely new, where people who have different opinions and can disagree strongly with each other can be still on the same platform, and everyone can have a reasonable debate. As long as you agree that America shouldn't be destroyed, and the Bill of Rights is just an amazing thing that we should all get together and protect and live, then I think your voice should be heard. Matt Kibbe joins us now. Hello, Matt.
Hey, Glenn. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. So, Matt, bring me up to speed on what you're learning as you are working with millennials now and outside of the political realm.
You know, years ago, I was reading the polling results from something that the Reason Foundation put out, where, you know, they were showing this very concerning trend with young people supporting socialism more than capitalism. But when you dug into the questions a little bit deeper, they would ask young people the follow-up question, well, should government own the means of production? And the answer was, hell no, that's a stupid idea. So I realized that there's a language problem. Like we're using the same word, but it means different things to different people. And I think a lot of young people that are drawn to so-called democratic socialism view it very much as a bottom-up, local-vore, let's all work together in voluntary cooperation to solve problems.
Yeah.
And that of course is the exact opposite of what you and I understand as socialism, and certainly the dire history of socialism in practice.
So what is happening to the movement? Are you seeing millennials start to wake up? Because I feel like they are.
I think they're the most gettable generation when it comes to the values of voluntary cooperation and you know you're right to pursue your own dreams as long as you don't hurt people or take their stuff. That's who they are. They live in this radically libertarian world where they curate everything through technology and social media. But we're probably not connecting with them on language, and we're also never going to connect with them if our offer is here's these two tired old political parties, and you have to choose one of those.
Correct.
It's an alien concept to them that they would actually have only two choices on anything. So I think we have to tell stories. I think part of the stories, some of the stories are the devastating history of socialism in practice. They're gut-wrenching, horrible, depressing things. But also, you know, the cool stories about what liberty creates, like can you actually brew a fantastic double hop triple IPA? You can't in Venezuela, but in America you can do that because we allow for choice and creation and serving customers and doing what you want and bringing new products to market. But those kinds of stories, I think, without sort of beating people over the head with economics, I think that's the future of how we connect.
So, Matt, have you seen the libertarian movement in Brazil that has brought a lot of American libertarians down? And they've talked to them all, and they're like, wow, okay, we don't want to do it that way. And their point is, libertarian in America, that movement is basically run by old guys, in their view, old guys who are in Congress and are trying to do things, And they're like, this has got to be a youth thing. It's got to be outside. And they have made a huge impact. And it's just a group of people who took their time and their talent and started explaining these things online. And they are moving the needle down in Brazil. Are you aware of them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a huge movement down there. You can actually find organizations like that all over the world now. I just got back from the Republic of Georgia speaking to about 1,000 young libertarian kids. I mean, they're 20 years old and they're looking for alternatives. But it is that the ethos in Brazil and other places is very much based on youth. It's based on libertarian values, and it's a rejection of the political status quo. They don't find it appealing anywhere across the board. And yes, American libertarians could learn a lot. American conservatives could learn a lot from the youth liberty movement across the world.
I agree. You were just over in Georgia. Tell me what you're finding over in Europe. I think things are getting frightening, and you're not hearing about anybody who is standing up going, no, neither of those is the answer.
Well, this whole idea that you have to choose between hardcore Marxist violence, Antifa, or some sort of flavor of white nationalism and fascism is this false choice, I think, that's trying to be imposed all over the world. And the counter-revolution is again, with young people saying, you know what, neither of those deadly isms, you know, Marxism, fascism, socialism, white nationalism, they're all kind of the same thing. They're all top-down. They're all looking to make us all conform to one set of goals that are imposed by somebody else. And people are rejecting that. So I think that I tend to be an optimist about what's going on, not just in Europe, but in the U.S., because we're in the middle of this paradigm shift. And it used to be that top-down institutions told us what to think and what to do. And now we're discovering through technology that that's not really the case anymore. We're discovering that all politicians lie, that government institutions don't do what they said they were going to do. And we're discovering that we're all a little bit different. So we're sort of sorting that out. But the solution is not to choose between fascism and socialism. The solution is to choose liberty and self-reliance and voluntary cooperation and all these beautiful values that you were talking about this earlier. The Bill of Rights and the American experiment was really built on this stuff.
So, Matt, I talk to people in Silicon Valley. I follow it very closely. I have been impressed by the number of libertarians that are out there. However, I'm torn when people say, hey, we've got to have an ASI, Manhattan Project, because we don't want Russians to get it or China to get it. Well, I don't really want the United States government to either have it. I don't want Google to have it. I don't really want anybody to have it, quite frankly. But we can't put that genie back in the bottle. But Google came out a few weeks ago, and they said they're not going to do business with the United States government, even though they will. They're not going to do business with the Pentagon, et cetera, et cetera. But they are doing business with China, which is terrifying. And then Microsoft came out and said, hey, AI, we've got the Pentagon's back. We'll share everything we have with the Pentagon. Where are the libertarians in Silicon Valley when it comes to China and teaching AI how to kill and control?
Yeah, I think it's a problem, and I don't think that anyone in Silicon Valley is going to step up and protect us from the abuse of all these technological innovations. You know, the entire history of Silicon Valley is really rooted in DARPA and government contracts in the first place. So, you know, they're gonna pursue their profit margins. You know, Amazon is doing the same thing, but again, the counter-revolution in technology, these are all very top-down, controlled by a few actors sorts of technologies. And the next step has to be blockchain technologies that aren't controlled by, you know, corporate interests, government interests, anybody's interests. It has to be more bottom-up. And I do believe that there are technological solutions, and I tend to be quite romantic about what crypto and blockchain is going to bring to us in the next 5 years.
Matt, you've been with CRTV. Now that has become Blaze TV. You are a staunch libertarian. There are things that we agree on. Most, I think, we agree on. Many things we don't agree on. But you are in a company that has anyone from you to Gavin McGinnis to me to Mark Levin to Eric Bowling, all of us, we have so much that we disagree on. Why were you willing to take the heat to be the libertarian on CRTV for the last few years?
Well, you know, libertarians don't neatly fit into any box. So it wasn't like I could go to big libertarian TV and speak theirs. But I also think, I mean, the whole concept behind what we're doing is to find that common ground amongst people and ideologies and tribes and communities that disagree with each other on some pretty important things. And I think that's important. And since I left FreedomWorks, I've spent a lot of time not just talking to conservatives through CRTV, but talking to libertarians, including Big L libertarians at the party, and also talking to progressives, because I think there are some common values in there that do hold us together. And by the way, those are the values that are going to save America from all of this tribal warfare that's tearing us apart.
Those are the values that we all came here for when we were all immigrants. We came here for those values. I mean, the people on the border who are crawling across the border now, they are, you know, whether they say it or not, they are coming for those values unless they have ill intent. They want the opportunity to explore and to break out of their condition. They want a chance to live in a country that has laws and everybody is treated fairly. And we're not talking about that. We're talking about immigration and this thing on the border as if that doesn't matter, as if the laws of the land and what they're coming here for don't matter. We saw, I don't know if you saw the story of what was the guy's name? Patty was rich, friend of Clinton, friend of Trump, was taking the Lolita plane. What's his name? You know who I'm talking about, Matt?
Yeah, I don't remember his name.
He was taking the Lolita plane. What's his name?
Yeah, I know.
You know who I'm talking about.
Rich, actually.
What's his name?
I thought it was Rich, actually.
No. Anyway, but he is rich, and he kind of got off. Well, he didn't kind of get off. He got off after 80 women were going to Epstein. 80 women were going to testify against him. And he brokered a deal because justice isn't blind in America. It's just not.
Yeah.
And if we lose that, we lose everything we were.
And by the way, like that, that rage against the machine that there isn't equal treatment under the law is something that I think animates a lot of young people that are attracted to democratic socialism. You know, we've all picked on Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, but if you go back and look at her original viral campaign video, you have to get like 90% through it before you really disagree with anything she's saying, because she's saying that the system is rigged. She's saying that there's this crony collusion between members of Congress and Wall Street. Mm-hmm. And that could have been a Tea Party ad. And then at the end, they sort of throw on, that's why we need Medicare for all.
Right.
But the values there are very much, you know, it could be Ron Paul, it could be Bernie Sanders, it could be the Tea Party, it could even be some of the themes that Donald Trump touched on when he was just raging against the swamp.
Matt Kibbe from Free the People, and you can also watch him on blazetv.com, blazetv.com, you can find him there, and freethepeople.org. I'd love to have you back on and talk a little bit about freethepeople.org, because I know you're reimagining what the Tea Party 2.0 might look like. And I'd love to have that discussion with you. So maybe next time we have you on, Matt.
Let's do it. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Matt Kibbe.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.